Well, good morning. So I'm a research horticulturist in Corvallis, Oregon. My expertise is in water nutrient management and not in humic acids, or humic substances. So I don't have a lot of experience with it, but we have been working with it since 2011 in lab, in our lab, and looking at the use of humic acids in a variety of berry crops, including blueberries, cranberries, raspberries, and strawberries. And today I'm going to take you through the story of how I first got interested in humic acids, and that was in blueberries. Blueberry consumption has gone up a lot in recent years due to the reported health benefits of blueberries, the availability of the crop year-round due to new cultivars, and new global markets. So within the last 20 years, there's been a remarkable increase in blueberry production. You see that in 2005, we went from 104,000 acres worldwide to almost 300,000 acres in 2015, and that acreage continues to grow. U.S. is the biggest producer of blueberries in the world, but they are produced in almost every continent except Antarctica. But there's not too many crops where we've seen this kind of increase in growth in recent years. So there's different types of blueberries. They are produced in various areas, like I said, of the country. In the northern parts of the country, we grow what's called northern high bush. Up in Maine and up in northeast, up in Canada, we have low bush types as well. And recently, there was development of rapid eye and low bush, or southern high bush blueberries, where we now can grow low chill varieties in states that don't have a lot of cold weather conditions. So, as a result of all these new cultivars and types of blueberries, the production has increased a lot. Now, I'm from Oregon, and we grow northern high bush blueberries. High bush blueberries can get well over 6 feet tall if you let them. This is Chad Finn. He's about 6'2", and you can see he's standing in a 20-year-old field of blue jay blueberries. It typically takes anywhere between 6 to 8 years to reach maturity in a field. Now, you get multiple harvests off the field, so some of the fruit might go to fresh, some might go to processed. Anything that goes to fresh has to be picked by hand. Anything that goes to processed, we pick with machines, obviously to save labor, but because the machines bruise the fruit, it can't be sold for fresh, won't keep in the coolers. Blueberry is a unique crop. Unlike most crops, it's an acid-loving crop. It actually prefers a pH between 4.5 and 5.5. It's also very shallow-rooted. Most of its roots, for a perennial crop, most of its roots are concentrated in the top foot of soil, and it has very fine root systems. The average root diameter of its root system is between 40 and 70 micrometers, so that's smaller than your hair. So it doesn't have root hairs, but it has very fine roots. As a result of being a plant adapted to low pH conditions, it has some unique nutrient requirements. One is it prefers the ammonium over nitrate. In fact, it doesn't have nitrate reductase, so it takes it up, but it can't utilize the nitrate. And it also has lower nutrient needs than most crops. It has low requirements for phosphorus, potassium, calcium, and magnesium, and it tolerates high levels of metals in its tissue. It tolerates very high levels of manganese and very high levels of aluminum. Now, blueberry historically has been irrigated by sprinklers, but in recent years, more and more growers are going to drip for a number of reasons. One is for increasing coarse water use efficiency, but another is food safety. You don't have to worry about the water getting on the fruit, selling a fresh market crop. One benefit of using drip is the ability to fertigate, and we had done some work back in we published this in 2015, where we compared fertigation with nitrogen fertilizers, liquid urea in particular, versus granular fertilizers, and what we saw was a 12% to 40% increase with fertigation with nitrogen than we did with the use of granular fertilizer. So a lot of growers are now not only using drip irrigation, They're fertigating with their nitrogen source. What we found is the granular fertilizers cause salt damage in the plants, which of course will reduce growth initially and reduce the yields of the plants. In this particular study, we compared for fertigation to granular fertilizers. Granular fertilizers, they usually do triple split application. For fertigation, we did weekly injections, April through August, and we found that young plants were 80% larger with weekly fertigation. However, we also found with fertigation, we required 150 kilograms per hectare of nitrogen to maximize growth. With the granular fertilizers, we needed less than 50 kilograms per acre. So it was a lot less efficient during establishment of planting. And if you think about it, we're putting on an ammonium form of nitrogen. And as you probably know, ammonium is immobile in soil, so where you put it is where it stays. So if you've got your plants spaced 3 feet apart and your emitters are every 1 foot, it's very inefficient initially because you're applying a lot of that ammonium between the plants. It's not getting to the plants initially during the first 2 years after planting. So what we did is we did a new study to look at, okay, how can we optimize the use of nitrogen fertilizer during establishment of the planting? So we looked at several different treatments. We looked at different drip configurations. We looked at the use of pre-plant fertilizers. We looked at the timing of the fertigation that we're doing. And we also looked at alternative fertilizers, looking at slow-release nitrogen fertilizers, and also looking at humic acids. So my student that worked on this, Oscar Vargas, so he had 12 different treatments out there, and that he could basically do whatever he wanted. So, you know, I wanted to look at drip configurations. So we looked at one line, two lines fixed. In other words, putting the lines on both sides of the plants, but fixed 20 centimeters from each side. Two lines move, where you put them close to the plant initially and then away from the plant later on. Or we were also looking at this capillary drip system called KISS, capillary irrigation subsurface system, where rather than a point source of water, you get a line source. And we also looked at alternative fertilizer. So we wanted to look at urea sulfuric acid, so adding not only the urea, but also adding sulfuric acid to help reduce pH. The standard that growers were using with fertigation is liquid urea, because that's pretty much your cheapest source of ammonium-based fertilizer. Looking at a controlled-release fertilizer, so a urea that basically releases that nitrogen slowly to plants, see if that helps. And then Oscar wanted to look at humic acids. He was approached by a humic acid dealer and talked him into giving it a try. I said, "Well, go ahead. I thought it was snake oil. Go ahead and give it a try. Let's see what happens. It's your study." So he went ahead and did that. So we had a humic acid program that not only included nitrogen, so we added that with our liquid urea, but it also, of course, had some other nutrients, phosphorus, a little bit of potassium and zinc in it. And so here are 12 treatments. So basically, we had the four different drip configurations that I showed in that previous slide. We had the different alternative fertilizers. So either we had the urea sulfuric acid, where we moved the lines. We had the granular with liquid urea. So the idea here is we put in small doses of granular fertilizer initially to around the plants to get them started and then switch over to fertigation. And then we looked at controlled-release fertilizers, both with and without fertigation afterwards. And then we had our humic acid treatment. And then to control for the nutrients that were in the humic acids, we had a treatment with the same nutrients but without the humic acids. And then we looked at pre-plant fertilizers and applying it rather than from mid-April to late July, we'd applied it from mid-April to mid-September. And so Oscar dug up the plants the first year. And basically, the dry weight of these plants fell in three categories. And the first category was either with the humic acids or with the urea sulfuric acid. That produced the largest plants in the field. The next group was basically, which included the control for the humic acid, was any treatment where we had the lines close to the base of the plant the first year. And then the worst treatments were anything where we had the lines away from the plant the first year. So again, the humic acids and the urea sulfuric acids produced the most growth the first year. Now, if you look at the root systems, we didn't see any significant differences in dry weight, but you could see how the drip configurations affected how those roots distributed. You had one line, the roots tend to clump under the plant, whereas if you had two lines, you can kind of see where those drip laterals were. or where we had that KISS system that kind of made a flat type root system. We look at the root system from the alternative fertilizer treatments. Not a significant difference here, with one exception, with the controlled release fertilizers and the granular urea. You can see that the roots don't look as healthy. They're actually burnt. They have salt burn from the fertilizer. So even those small rates of 10 pounds per acre of the urea was damaging the roots of these plants. And the controlled release fertilizer, which theoretically should have given the nitrogen in low doses, that actually caused a lot of root damage too. So, we thought, okay, let's look at the relationship. Was this simply a nitrogen effect? And when we plotted out the dry weights against the leaf nitrogen values, so in blueberries, we typically collect our leaves in August, analyze them for nitrogen. The standard's typically above 1.75 to 2 is what we're looking for. And we could see there was somewhat of a relationship. And again, the treatments kind of fell out, where you see the two lines move. They're kind of clumped together. The two lines fixed were clumped together, with the one exception with the controlled release fertilizers, which had a lot more nitrogen in them, but the plants didn't grow very well. And I think that was due to the salt burn that we got from that. And then you could see that the N-furic and the humic acid treatment were the largest plants. And with the humic acid, you can see that you got a little higher growth than expected based on the nitrogen that's in the leaf tissue, and the N-furic, we had a little bit less growth based on the nitrogen. The second year, the shoot dry weights of these plants started to become more similar between any treatment where we had the lines close to the plants initially, and not a whole lot difference there. We looked at the root dry weights with these different drip configurations. And again, there wasn't a significant difference. The roots pretty much looked very similar regardless of where we had those drip lines placed. Now, if we look at the alternative fertilizer treatments, again, no difference between the urea or the granular fertilizers, the controlled release fertilizers, or even the N-furic. But when you looked at the humic acid, this is what was revealing. We got more than 50% more root growth with the humic acid treatment than we did with either the standard, just the liquid urea alone, or with the liquid urea plus the fertilizers that were in the humic acid treatment. And this slide alone has basically convinced many blueberry growers to start using humic acid. So it's a little scary to have this one study where now roughly 60 to 70% of the industry is using humic acid as a result of this particular work. So again, we looked at this relationship between the dry weight of the plants and the leaf nitrogen that's in the tissues, and that relationship fell apart at this point. So again, you can see that we're clumped together with the plants where the lines were close to the plants initially, with the exception of the humic acid. Obviously, we got a lot more biomass with the humic acid than we did with the two lines close together, and that did not appear to be a nitrogen effect. And then you can see anything with two lines fixed, the plants did not do as well. We did not get as much dry weight, and in some cases with the controlled release fertilizers, they did quite poorly. So we looked at in more detail to see, okay, what's causing this humic acid effect? Why are we getting more growth the first year? Why are we getting more root production? So as I mentioned, I work in water and nutrient relations, so we looked at, well, is this a nutrient effect? So if we look at the leaf analysis, two significant things that we saw in these four particular treatments was some differences in phosphorus, but the only difference was that in our control treatment for the humic acid, we had more phosphorus, had higher phosphorus concentrations than we had in our standard liquid urea treatment. In the we look at potassium, we saw a difference here between the N-furic and the liquid urea treatment. Not sure exactly why, perhaps a pH effect, but there was a significant difference, but whether that's due to the humic acid, I'm not convinced of that. We look at pH, and this is kind of interesting. As I mentioned, blueberries adapted to low soil pH, basically between 4.5 and 5.5. Now this site had a high pH to begin with. It was the pH was 6.5, We did incorporate elemental sulfur prior to planting, which is the standard practice, but what we could see is that those two treatments, whether it was the N-puric, which you would expect to reduce the soil pH because of the sulfuric acid in it, and the humic acid, they had the same pH. They had 5.2 to 5.4 pH, whereas the other treatments, the pHs were higher, 6 to 6.1, and higher than what's recommended for blueberries. Okay, thank you. And then if we look at phosphorus in the soil, we see that both the humic acid treatment and the humic acid control had higher phosphorus levels than the other two treatments, but no surprise there because obviously we're adding phosphorus with those particular fertilizers. We look at sulfur in the soil. There was higher sulfur with the N-puric. Again, that's no surprise given that we're putting sulfuric acid on that particular treatment. And then the one thing that I would say that was probably due to humic acid is that we did see higher levels of zinc in the soil. So we had higher concentrations of zinc in the soil with the humic acid than we did with the humic acid control. So clearly the humic acids are increasing the availability of zinc. Now in the plants themselves, we actually analyze the wood, the roots, the leaves of the plants from the humic acid treatment and the humic acid control. And really the only thing we saw, so there's no differences in any nutrients in the leaves, no difference in the nutrient concentration in the roots, in the shoots or the wood, but we did see higher concentrations of copper in the root than with humic acids than in the control. Now whether that's causing the response, I kind of doubt it, but that was the one thing that we did see significant with all that particular analysis. Of course, you got more uptake with the humic acid treatment, but that's simply because the plants are bigger. So to summarize, that basically we're seeing greater establishment when we use fertigation, particularly when we with humic acids. So as I mentioned, a lot of our industry has now gone to using humic acids in blueberries as a result of this work. Estimated that's adding about $75 million per year to the industry, so it's clearly helping to pay for itself. So what's next? Well, obviously we did that during establishment, but now the question is, what happens when the plants are mature? So we initiated a study a couple years ago looking at the effects of humic acids on mature plants and seeing what effect it has on production and fruit quality. As of yet, we haven't seen any benefits on this mature planting, so I'm not sure what's going on there. Another issue that we need to deal with is that, as I mentioned, we did it with fertigation through the drip system, but humic acids are typically dark. Growers don't like to put dark stuff through their expensive drip systems. They're worried that it's plugging up their drip emitters. So many growers are now going to using fulvic acid. So it would be interesting to compare, you know, how does fulvic acid compare to what we use as a humic and fulvic acid fertilizer. Now, looking at some of the different humic acid substances and see if we get the same response. And so, yeah, so typically what growers do is that if they're using this product, they spray it on the soil. So the other question is, how does it work if we're spraying it on the soil versus fertigating with it? And John, thanks.
We have time for one or two questions.
Yes.
How much humic were you using in those trials the first and second year establishment?
So the question was, how much humic substance did we use in that trial? I showed you what the products are and how much they contain. I think what we did was we put on a total of 5 gallons of those products over the course of the season. So we put it in weekly with fertigation. So we divided that 5 gallons up. So
kind of about the 5 gallons per acre level, I think.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And the percentage product or whatever number, did you know?
Off the top of my head, no, I don't. Yeah.
If we email you, is this something that we could receive at the PowerPoint, or is this something that?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, this is all published, so you can have a copy of the PowerPoint, and also I believe this will also be available through the conference too. So yeah, you'll be able to download it from the website. Okay, great.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Thank you very much.